Hello, everyone, and welcome to A Cast of Kings, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series House of the Dragon. I'm David Chen, and I have not read Fire and Blood, the book on which House of the Dragon is based.
And I'm Kim Renfro, and I have read Fire and Blood, the book upon which House of the Dragon is based.
It rolls trippingly off the tongue, those new intros.
Can I say it's a little better than The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power?
You can say that. You can say that, and I will not confirm nor deny. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. So today is the last pre-House of the Dragon premiere episode that we are going to record. The next time you hear us, we will be talking about the season premiere of House of the Dragon. Very exciting times. And so there is a couple of kind of fun tidbits we wanted to share with you today. And specifically, we want to talk about three things that George R. R. Martin specifically requested the showrunners include. I think these are, I would not consider these spoilers, you know, but they are kind of like neat little touches that have been revealed about what will be in the show. So we'll be diving into that and a couple of other fun things. But before we get to any of that, I do want to make a really big announcement, which is Joanna Robinson and I ran A Cast of Kings for many years. And during that time, many people supported the show, listened to the show. And I wanted to announce that there's a way for people to do that this year as well. In the past, we've run Kickstarters, we've sort of experimented with Patreon, but this year, there is a way to support this podcast by going to decodingtv.com. Decodingtv.com is going to be a community of TV enthusiasts that features podcasts and videos and writing about television. And this podcast, The Cast of Kings, it will always be free. Like, you will always be able to download it for free and get it with an ad-supported version. But if you want to get a premium version of this podcast, which is no ads, early access to episodes, the ability to comment on episodes, bonus segments that Kim Renfro and I are going to make specifically for this podcast, then you will get all that stuff by going to decodingtv.com and signing up for a subscription there. So I know there's like a lot of people in the audience who are listening to this right now who like have enjoyed Cast of Kings in the past and have wondered, like, how can I support the show moving forward? Very easy way to do that. Go to decodingtv.com. But if you just want to listen for free, that's also fine. We hope you will consider supporting us because I think it will be a fun and interesting community over there at decodingtv.com. And Kim, I've been so grateful to work with you over the course of the last few months. And it's only because I feel like our collaboration, our partnership has a lot of potential and that this podcast has a lot of potential that I felt like decodingtv.com is a thing that is worth launching. You know, like if, I mean, if this had gone really badly, I'd be like, let's not even do the podcast. No, but I think it's gone really, really well. Like I've had such a great time working with you and I hope people will enjoy the upcoming season of the podcast and consider supporting the podcast as well. So
yeah, truly likewise. I think I cannot overstate how excited I am to not only be able to get to do this once a week, but also to be able to like have that community back around the water cooler once again for Westeros.
Yeah. So decodingtv.com, join there. Again, you can comment. We'll like read comments and talk about them on the air and stuff like that. So that's where you can be part of the Cast of Kings community. And we hope you'll consider joining us. Okay. So let's dive into a couple of fun tidbits that we wanted to discuss before the House of the Dragon premiere, which is going to be on August 21st. Sunday night show on HBO again. You know, it's nice to have like a Sunday night show. It's like a ritual, right?
That 9 p.m. slot, the coveted. Mm-hmm. Well, not sorry, 9 p.m. Eastern. We're on the Pacific. Yeah. We're on the West Coast now, baby. We get dinner time, Game of Thrones.
It's okay. It's okay. After the pandemic, I'm eating dinner at like 4:30 p.m. these days. So. it's no problem. Okay. So Kim Renfro, in your travels last few weeks, you have been talking with people involved with the show and you've gotten some fun little bits of trivia that we wanted to share with folks today. One of the things that you gleaned from some of your interviews and conversations is how young some of the people that are in House of the Dragon actually are, right?
Yeah, it really struck me. I was interviewing Millie Alcock and Emily Carey, who play the young Rhaenyra and Alicent, respectively. And especially seeing them, I think, outside of their costumes and the wigs and everything, like it sort of struck me that they seemed on the slightly younger side. Like, pretty sure that they're in their early 20s. Millie might actually be 19. And I asked, I was like, did you watch Game of Thrones like before this? And they both kind of laughed and they were like, no, we were way too young. Like, I think Millie in her British accent was like, that hardly would have been appropriate. I was like, yeah, no, I wouldn't have shown a 10-year-old Game of Thrones. So like, truly. So yeah, it was cool to chat with them. And they both said that they basically like got caught up with the entire series during pre-production for House of the Dragon. And Emily Carey, who plays young Allison, actually said that like, it sort of scared her a little bit to see like the full scope of what was going on. But then once she like got into her binge, she said, quote, there's so much more to it than just fantasy and dragons and stuff, end quote. And she was kind of talking about the whole like all the family dynamics, the power. And we know that Benioff and Weiss, the Game of Thrones showrunners, they originally pitched Game of Thrones as the Sopranos in Middle Earth. And so like, I think that's something that people who have never watched Game of Thrones might not realize, is that it is about like a lot of these political power dynamics just as much as it's about all of the magical fantasy elements and stuff. And so, yeah, she said that she had gained a huge amount of respect for the story that she was sort of stepping into by rewatching it, which, yeah. Can you imagine binging all 8 seasons of Game of Thrones right before you're like...
right before like possibly what is the biggest role of your entire career, right?
Right.
Yeah. That'd be a lot to take in. That'd be a lot to take in, I think. But I think it also just struck you that like, it hasn't been that long since Game of Thrones ended, but that like House of the Dragon with some of these younger casts, it really does feel, you know, like the people who were in Game of Thrones, the actors who were in Game of Thrones became massive international stars.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of people know who...
Sophie Turner, Maisie Williams.
The guy who plays Jon Snow.
Kit Harington.
Wow. I know who it is, okay? Those people are now like internationally known actors. And
yeah.
It feels like with House of the Dragon, we're about to see another... You know, there's people we know, like Olivia Cooke and Patty Considine and stuff like that, Matt Smith, but there's going to be like a whole new crop of actors that like everyone's going to know now. And we're at the moment, as we're recording this, as we're talking about this right now, before that explosion occurs, you know, like they're at this unique moment in time where it's very possible they're going to be a big deal. And
the fact that we are fully at a new generation of potentially like younger audiences tuning in is really fascinating, because like the fact that the actors themselves couldn't tap into that part of the culture when they were in middle school and high school, and now they're, you know, entering young adulthood. And the fact that I'm like, are we gonna get like Gen Z discourse on House of the Dragon? Because it's like, it's been what, 14 years? No, don't tell me. I'm like, it's not the dates, it's the math that's holding me up right now. But no, it was 2011.
Yes.
What year is it?
It's been 11 years.
11 years. The last 3 years might as well count for 6. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it's received, and also to see like whether or not the cast and stuff have different conversations about the show than what we saw from the past people, like young Maisie and Sophie Turner and everyone. So yeah, it was cool to get to talk to them and see that perspective.
So, I'm going to pull an audible here, Kim, and bring up a topic that we did not discuss beforehand, but that I wanted to just comment on before we get to the final topic today about what George R. R. Martin wants on the show. I saw this tweet from Peter Kafka that he made about House of the Dragon. He said, quote, yes, HBO/Warner/Discovery need the new Game of Thrones prequel to work. So do lots of other people in the content ecosystem. Here's a plucky site from New York that has 3 posts up 11 days before launch. Gotta get that early SEO flag planted, end quote. And then he basically quote tweets
three
New York Times pieces. Here is the titles of the New York Times pieces. Quote, can House of the Dragon be HBO's next Game of Thrones? In House of the Dragon, Patty Considine claims the crown, and also House of the Dragon is coming. Here's what you need to know, end quote. So even the New York Times, aka possibly the most successful media website in the country right now, needs to get into that Game of Thrones content action.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's interesting that, like, there was a massive content ecosystem of which you and I are a part.
Yeah.
That depended on Game of Thrones and its success, right? And there is a lot of questions as to whether or not that content system ecosystem can spin up again with House of the Dragon coming up again. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I think that content machine will be there again, but its role is going to be drastically different than, especially in the final seasons of Game of Thrones. Not that the content machine wasn't there from the beginning, because it was, but like the intensity to which there was, like, I mean, I myself, as you said, was absolutely part of it. I was writing like 10 articles in 3 days sometimes about like the latest episode or whatever. But I think that a lot of that was driven by this desire to know how the story ends. Like all of the fan theories, the analyses, like the photos like from the next episode, that was bananas. How I could throw like 10 pictures that HBO sent me into a slideshow and get like 15 million page views on literally just like generic photos of the cast just looking good and cold or sweaty, depending on where they were in the world and stuff. And so with House of the Dragon, it's interesting because like a big piece of that content economy isn't going to be there anymore in terms of like, I don't know, we can't really do a like, here are theories on how this is going to end because we already know largely like how it ends. Or we can't, not that people aren't still interested in set leaks, but they aren't interested to the point of like, is Jon Snow alive? Like that type of stuff. And so I think that there will be probably like a condensing, but I'm excited because that leaves room for more of the like reflection on why this is good television, regardless of whether or not it's managing to like shock us with a twist or like land an epic story that is unfinished in the books.
It does feel like the days of the monoculture are behind us, where like everyone we know is watching Game of Thrones. And I am so curious, like how many people are going to be watching the show, how many people are going to be listening to the podcast. And as you said, like even if there wasn't that component removed of now we actually know what happens, I feel like it's going to be a come down from Game of Thrones, both because of how that show ended and because we live in a different era. And it's years after Game of Thrones ended. And like the question is whether Game of Thrones moment as part of the zeitgeist is over, right? That's kind of the question for me, is like, it had an amazing, spectacular moment where everyone knew what it was and was talking about it, and it ended, and it's like, is that it? You know, is it over, or can it come back again? I don't know. It's rare to see a show sequel do that. Or prequel do that. I mean, we saw it to some degree with Better Call Saul, you know, which just wrapped up this past week. And I saw a lot of conversation about it, but I think even at its biggest, like, I don't know that the conversation around Better Call Saul was as total. Like, I'll tell you this. I know only one other or two other people in my life that are watching Better Call Saul, whereas Game of Thrones, like literally everyone I know was watching Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones. You know, those were like ubiquitous shows. So,
yeah. I will say my gut check right now, as we are so close to the premiere, is that I think that it absolutely has the potential to recapture people again. I'm feeling excited about it in a way that I wasn't anticipating, which tells me that other people might feel that way too, after they actually see any piece of it beyond what we've seen so far.
Well, I think as my wife communicated to you before we started recording, your conversations with me on this podcast have single-handedly brought her around from not caring at all that this show exists to she's actually looking forward to the House of the Dragon premiere. So
woo-hoo.
Hopefully if you're listening to this at A Cast of Kings, Kim Renfro has done the same for you as well. And also hopefully you'll consider supporting us at decodingdv.com. Okay. Wanted to bring that up because it's just like, it's interesting to reflect a little bit on the content ecosystem around Game of Thrones, and we'll probably have more to say about that later. Anyway, let's get to the main topic today, which is three things that George R.R. Martin specifically requested the showrunners include in House of the Dragon. Again, very, very minor spoilers. Like, I don't consider these to be really spoilers at all, unless you're like super hardcore about it.
No.
Under what context did this information arrive with you, Kim? So, and, yeah.
Yeah, this was once again from my roundtable chat with Miguel Sapochnik and Ryan Condal, the two showrunners. Again, Miguel is kind of like the directing arm of this partnership, and then Ryan is more of the writer. And Ryan is like this big lore, just he's like the lore guy. He's like George R. R. Martin's sort of handpicked person who he trusts to like bring the books to life. So I asked, I was like, were there any specific things that George from the beginning was like, absolutely got to have that in there? And I asked the question very broadly. And yeah, they came back with some specifics that I wasn't really expecting. I thought it was going to be like, oh, this one battle he really wanted to see, mm-hmm. or like X, Y, and Z. But no, they said that one of his requests, and I can go through all of them, but the first one was not only colorful dragons, but dragons of like varied shapes. We've already talked on previous episodes about like the size of the dragons will differ, obviously based on how old they are. But something that's distinct about the way that George describes the different dragons in the show is that it's almost like different dog breeds, or like that there are some that are really slender and wriggly. There are some that are like stocky and scary, like a bulldog or whatever. And so he wanted to make sure that distinction was there, because the idea is that at this point of Targaryen history, all the small folk who live in Westeros, particularly the people that live in King's Landing, where the big dragon pit is, that they could look up in the sky and know exactly who was flying above them just based on the coloring and like the shape of their dragon, that they're supposed to be that distinct, like airplanes, I guess. Like if you can tell the difference between like a private jet and a Spirit airline, like neon yellow thing flying above your head. So, and I they didn't bring up Game of Thrones, but I did
I would hate to be on the Spirit Airlines dragon. the Spirit Airlines equivalent of a dragon. That would be like pretty rough.
You get absolutely no accommodations. It's up to you if you fall off this thing and die.
Yeah, there's no saddle or anything. There's nothing to hold on to, you know?
Nope.
You just
not a single drink of free water on that dragon. Very poor flying experience. Sorry, Spirit Airlines, whatever. But yeah, they didn't. It's true. They don't provide you with water.
Yes, yes.
That was their business decision. And now I'm talking about it on a podcast.
Yes, yes. Clearly it made an impact on you.
I've thought about it a lot. But no, they, you know, in Game of Thrones, Dany's dragons did start out kind of being distinctly different colors. Like their coloring was sort of supposed to match their names. I don't know if you knew about that, how like the one that was Rhaegar was more green. Drogon was supposed to be like black and red, and Viserion was like cream and gold. And so each of the dragons in Fire and Blood also are given similar like coloring descriptions. So basically just like kind of be on the alert for kind of registering like the color and look of each dragon as you see them associated with a different Targaryen, because then you're going to be able to do what the small folk in the show can do and be like, oh, that dragon that just flew overhead was, that's so-and-so coming back to Red Keep or whatever it is. So that was cool. And then the second thing that George requested, which also has to do with colors, apparently George is just real big into colors, was he specifically wanted them to make sure and have really bright heraldry for all of the different like lords and ladies of the court, for the people that you might see in like tournament settings or just like out and about in the rest of Westeros. And this is again something that was definitely present in Game of Thrones, but it got kind of dulled over time, you know, like a lot of the armor kind of looked similar. You had to kind of memorize like the helmet shapes to identify how Stark soldiers, as opposed to like being able to see them at a glance and know like, oh, that's House X, Y, and Z. And so I think that you can already see in the trailer from like a couple shots and stuff that there are like really vivid greens or reds or blues, really distinct big flags and like heralds for each of the houses.
The first one about dragons, that makes That's kind of self-evident why George R. R. Martin would want to make sure that's included, because, you know, if you wrote a bunch of different dragons, like, of course, you know, you want the world to reflect that in the show. Mm-hmm. Heraldry is like, okay, that feels like a stylistic decision that the show can make. Do you have any sense of why it was important for George R. R. Martin for there to be bright and colorful heraldry in the show?
Yeah, so the way that Ryan Condal phrased it, he said, quote, "It's such a time of high decadence and peace and wealth and prosperity for the realm, so everybody would really festoon themselves in their house colors." I love that word. Mm-hmm. Festoon. I'm obsessed with that.
Festooning. It was the festooning of times. It was the worst of times.
The lack of festooning in times.
Yeah. the festooning vacuum was palpable. in the Song of Ice and Fire time.
Yeah. So, I guess George had it in his mind that, like, he really wanted to show off that, like, festooning, and he conveyed that it has an importance in the story. And I think that, again, we saw bits of that in Game of Thrones where, like, the gown that someone was wearing spoke very clearly to their line of thinking or to their political ambitions. Like, Cersei had a number of, like, very elaborate Lannister colored gowns that she would wear in situations where you would think she was wanting to align herself more with the king. But as we knew, like, the Lannisters were kind of vying for power the whole time. So she was constantly in Lannister colors as opposed to Baratheon colors while she was at court. So I think that George just, I guess, wanted to, like, really convey that more clearly through the show. So they said that that's something that they paid attention to when it came to all of, like, the production design elements and stuff.
It is interesting to think about. Like, I guess when times are good, you like dressing up a little bit more. And when Robert Baratheon is king, that's when it's time for the gray drab colors to come out, I guess.
You know? Sure. Or I guess, like, in the logic of the story, if you're very wealthy and all of the trade is going well in your kingdom and whatever, that you would be able to easily access, like, really beautifully dyed cloth or, like, mm-hmm. have custom things like that made for you. Whereas if you're in wartime, you're probably wearing the same thing over and over again. Trade routes might be cut off. Everything gets a little bit shabby. So they didn't tell me that, but I can see that logic being.
Kim has the entire, like, Kim has a functioning version of Westeros, like, kind of inside of her head going at all times, like a terrarium, basically. And so, like, that's what would happen in the world according to the one inside your head, basically, right?
Yeah, please send help.
Okay, so that's thing one and two, which is colorful and varied dragons. The second thing is bright, colorful heraldry. I have to say, so far, pretty minor things, you know, that George R. R. Martin wanted included in the show. But go ahead. So what's the third thing?
The third thing is funny. It's a correction to the record that was established in Game of Thrones, I believe in the first season. There's a scene where Aemon Targaryen, you remember him from, he's the guy up at the wall who. Yeah.
Old guy, right?
Old guy, took the black, talks to Jon Snow a little bit, and he, like, mentions something about the line of succession when he was a boy. And so Miguel Sapochnik told me that George R. R. Martin, quote, had a bee in his bonnet, unquote. Which, again, if we're going to festoon ourselves with bees in our bonnets here on this press tour. I guess had a bee in his bonnet about the fact that one king, who was Jaehaerys II, got somehow written out of the history within the show's understanding of the line of succession. Miguel said that it might have been for reasons of clarity, quote unquote, whatever that might mean, but it's not something that has, like, a material effect on House of the Dragon. That king still isn't even in this period of time. But Miguel said that that it was requested that they write that wrong, and so they did. I'm assuming that we can be on the lookout for some, like, little aside line mention, maybe, or, like, maybe that's not even going to come into play until future.
Because
seasons.
These aren't, like, major character. This isn't, like, a major character in the show, as far as we know, right?
No. It's literally just one line about one king who was not an actual character in Game of Thrones, nor is he a character in Fire and Blood, at least in this section of Fire and Blood that they've begun to adapt. And so I guess it was just George being like, I need my show canon succession to be correct. And so they're going to do what they can.
George R. R. Martin impression there.
Thanks. Better or worse than my Spirit Airlines.
It's so interesting to think about, like, George R. R. Martin being like, okay, this show is an opportunity to write. It's like having a second kid, you know?
Mm.
And you're like, I'm going to, you know, do everything right this time that I messed up with the first kid or something like that, you know?
Sure.
But it's also interesting that these would be like some of the big things that he chooses, you know? Like, I guess the implication one could take from this is like he's actually okay with everything else about the world of the show, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, largely, he is happy with the world the show built and so on. I mean, what has been the totality of George R. R. Martin's reaction to Game of Thrones, the show? You know, what do you know about, like, how he felt about how the show ended, which was past, obviously, where his books were?
Yeah, that's a weird one because it's hard to gauge, because he sort of went dark on, like, he wasn't yeah. posting a lot of blog updates during the later seasons, all under the under the statement of I need to work on the Winds of Winter, so therefore I'm not writing any scripts for the show, or therefore I'm not mm-hmm. as involved as I want to be, or like as I could be in theory. But so like I've only ever seen him say positive things in passing of like wanting to congratulate Benioff and Weiss on landing that boat, on celebrating the Emmys that the show has won and everything. But he really stayed away from talking about any specifics towards the end there. And so it is interesting to now see this press tour, and he's doing a few more interviews, and he is definitely like he's on full active blog mode again on his not a blog, on his website. That's what he calls it, even though it is a blog, but he calls it not a blog for inside joke reasons that mm-hmm. I'm not aware of. And he has had nothing but like great things to say about House of the Dragon so far. He said that he's seen rough cuts of every single episode, thinks it's fantastic, think that they really nailed the tone. He seems to really like Ryan Condal and his understanding of Westeros and these characters and stuff. And so, yeah. But not that this means anything. I'm not adding meaning to this, but you can take from this what you will. But he said very similar things about Benioff and Weiss in the early seasons of Game of Thrones also. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. he was never, from the beginning, he was never like, oh, I had to sell my baby against my will. He was like more than happy.
He's not like an Alan Moore type who,
yeah, no,
you know, doesn't love derivative creations of his works or anything like that.
Yeah. And he's like, he's dropped critiques of it. Like there have been some books that have come out about HBO or about Game of Thrones. He's done some interviews where he'll critique like a certain choice that was made, but only to say like I would have done that differently. Like the one that I can think of is like he said that he didn't understand why Dany's wedding scene was changed so that her and Khal Drogo's first sexual encounter was less consensual mm-hmm. / not consensual at all. He said that he wouldn't have done that. And like, he also said something about the way that King Robert's boar hunt was filmed, like wasn't satisfying to him in terms of like what he had envisioned in his mind. But that was like budgetary reasons, right?
Yeah.
Like, so yeah. I don't know.
So it sounds like overall, he's been totally cool with how the shows have done Game of Thrones, and like has always been in general and continues to be, with some minor issues.
Yeah, I don't see that it would be in his interest to go around trash talking.
Well, it's a good thing artists always do things in their own interests.
That's true.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, sometimes artists don't. But it seems like either he genuinely has affection for how these shows have brought his world to life, and or he knows what's good for the pocketbook, right? So. All right. Well, I think that is about it in terms of what we wanted to cover today. I do want to say, in addition to supporting this podcast at decodingtv.com, you'll also be able to find us on YouTube and TikTok, acastofkings.com/YouTube, acastofkings.com/TikTok, where we'll be uploading both entire episodes to YouTube and also clips onto TikTok. But before we wrap up, Kim, any other thoughts you want to send people away with as we enter the weekend of the House of the Dragon premiere?
I would just say, if you're even the tiniest bit excited, lean into that excitement, because if you, like me, derived a lot of joy from seeing this world brought to life, I think we could all use a little more excitement and fun things in our lives. And so if this gets to be one of them for the next few months, I think that's rad. And I'm excited.
I agree. Thanks so much for listening. Find us at acastofkings.com. Email us at acastofkings@gmail.com. And we'll see you. We should say, like, scheduling-wise, I believe the current plan is for supporters at decodingtv.com to get this podcast hopefully Monday morning to mid-afternoon. And then on the regular Cast of Kings feed, it'll be available on Monday night or Tuesday early morning. So that is kind of be how it's going to be. Again, you can get early access at decodingtv.com, but like that is when you can next expect to hear us on this podcast feed. Monday early morning at decodingtv, or Monday morning / afternoon at decodingtv.com, Monday night / Tuesday morning for the rest of the Cast of Kings subscribers on the main feed. Yeah. So until then, have a great Game of Thrones related weekend.
Woohoo!
And we'll see you next week.
Bye.